is by performance of Nishkama Karma Yoga. That is, when one performs activities without being attached to the fruits of the activities. In the last 2-3 verses of the 5th chapter, Krishna had, in sutra or condensed form, talked about the process of Dhyana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, what is commonly called yoga by people at large. And now in the 6th chapter, this is the main subject, Ashtanga Yoga. How one comes to the point of liberation by the practice of this form of yoga. In the first 4 texts, Lord Krishna has described the meaning of true renunciation, and he has shown that renunciation is the same as yoga. Renunciation means to be detached from the fruits of one's actions, to abstain from one's prescribed duties, because one has already attained a stage of renunciation. Yoga also means to stabilize the mind by removing it from the sense objects. Last time we saw that yoga means to link. At this time, all the conditioned living entities in this world are linked to matter. Imagine that there is a vehicle that has a hook, and it is hooked onto something, so therefore it is attached. So by the hook of false ego or mithya ahankar, we are all hooked to material nature, and we are not able to come out of it. Therefore, we are taking birth again and again, again and again. So now the question is, when we want to remove this hook, then where do we attach it? You cannot be without attaching the hook somewhere. Either you attach the hook to matter, or you attach the hook to spirit. You attach this hook to this material world, or you attach this hook to God. Of the two, it is the same thing. When you remove the hook from matter, that is called renunciation. When you attach that hook to God, it is called yoga. You cannot do one without doing the other. Unless you have removed the hook from matter, how can you put the hook in God? So they are simultaneous processes. So therefore, Lord Krishna has described that sannyas and yoga really means the same thing. And a devotee who is practicing Krishna consciousness, he is simultaneously a yogi and also a sannyasi, even though he may be a householder. But because he is performing the highest activity, simultaneously is considered better than a sannyasi. We also discussed what yoga is. Yoga is like a ladder that takes us from this material world up to the kingdom of God, like a staircase that takes us from the ground floor to some destination. And we saw that depending on what the elevation of the staircase is, we call it by different names. At a certain elevation, we call it first floor. At a certain elevation of the stairs, we call it second floor, and so on. The staircase is the same. It is only that at different points in the staircase, we call it differently. So similarly, the ladder of yoga is one. At different points of elevation on this ladder of yoga, the practitioner is called by different names. He may be called a karma yogi, or a jnana yogi, ashtanga yogi, bhakta yogi, bhakti yogi, like that. So all these are ultimately meant to link us with the Lord. In the other practices of yoga, one has to also practice renunciation very strictly. But in the path of bhakti, the path itself is so sublime that it naturally brings about a sense of renunciation. There is no need to separately practice strict renunciation. Therefore, even a householder can practice bhakti and become perfect even in household life, although it is difficult because of the nature of household attachment. But it is possible for one who is very careful and very sincere and serious in Krishna consciousness.
Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janyatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahitukam.
The Bhagavatam explains that when one performs bhakti to Lord Vasudeva or Krishna, automatically Vairagya and Jnana, that is knowledge and renunciation, come within the heart. So that is why it is said that a devotee is simultaneously a yogi and a sannyasi. We also saw that the yoga ladder also can be seen as beginning and end. The beginning stage is Arurukshaha, the advanced stage is called Arudhaha. So Yoga Arurukshaha and Yoga Arudha. And then the fourth verse, Lord Krishna culminated by talking about the characteristics of one on the Yoga Arudha stage, who has come to the platform of perfection in yoga. And now Lord Krishna is going to describe the characteristics of one who has achieved that Yoga Arudha stage. And yoga, because it is very intimately connected with the state of the mind, so now in the next few texts from verses 5 to 9, Lord Krishna is going to talk about the mind. Specifically from verses 5 and 6, he is going to discuss the importance of controlling the mind. And then 7, 8, 9, he is going to talk about the state of one who has controlled the mind. What are the symptoms of one who has used the Yoga Arudha stage and controlled the mind? So yoga is very intimately linked with mind. Yoga, the central point or the focus is the mind, because ultimately the purpose of yoga is to control the mind. Why is it necessary to control the mind? Because the mind is the instrument through which we can understand or see God. Therefore, it is important for us to know in what way this instrument has to be used. If I have some electronic item with me, I should know how that is to be used, for what purpose that is to be used. Otherwise, I will end up harming myself or spoiling the equipment and spoiling my money. So similarly, the mind is an instrument. It is meant to be used for a purpose, for a beneficial purpose. And if we use it for that beneficial purpose, then we will be happy. So now, in the fifth verse, let us see what Lord Krishna has to say about the importance of the mind. So please chant after me. Text 5. We have not chanted the whole chapter today. Shall we chant now first? So, we have just been discussing that in the fourth verse, the Yoga Arudha platform, or the platform of perfection in yoga, has been described, and this topic will be continued in these coming verses. We saw that because in yoga practice, it is essentially a question of controlling the mind. Lord Krishna is therefore going to describe the importance of controlling the mind. So let us chant text 5 and hear what Krishna has to say about how the mind should be used, for what purpose this instrument should be used.
Uddharet Atmanatmanam. Nātmānam avasādayet. Ātmai vahyātmano bandhur. Ātmai varipur ātmanah.
One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is a friend of the conditioned soul
and his enemy as well. Kindly repeat. One may be surprised to note that Krishna has used the word Atma for mind. Generally we use the word Atma for the soul. But the word Atma in different contexts and circumstances can mean different things. The word Atma can mean soul, that is a normal context in which we use the word. But it can also mean mind. It can also mean body. Generally, however, the word Atma means soul. So here, Lord Krishna is saying, Atmanatmanam, that with the help of the mind, one must elevate oneself, uddhared, deliver. One must deliver oneself from this miserable situation of material existence. And one should not degrade oneself. Na atmanam avasadayet. Avasadayet means that one should not be put into degradation, one should not fall to lower levels of consciousness. So, Lord Krishna has very eloquently described the purpose of the mind. The instrument of the mind should be used to raise the level of consciousness of the conditioned soul, not to degrade it. And then Lord Krishna says, Atma, Atmaiva, hi Atmano Bandhu, that this Atma or the mind can be a friend, Bandhu, of the conditioned soul, or he can also be Ripur Atmanahai. Ripu means the enemy. The mind can also be the enemy. So therefore we see whether the mind is our friend or enemy is our choice. It is how we use the instrument of the mind that will eventually make it our friend or our enemy. From time immemorial, the conditioned soul has been associating with this material nature. Lord Krishna describes here that the mind must be trained so as to deliver the conditioned soul from this cycle of birth and death in which it has been stuck. From ever since the time we have come here in this world, we have been entangled with the mind and the senses. The mind and senses are very powerful, and the mind has got involved with the false ego. That is our problem. What is the function of the false ego? The false ego wants to enjoy this material nature. The false ego is what makes this pure spiritual soul identify with dead matter, which is a source of misery. So because of the strong false ego of wanting to enjoy matter, and because of the mind being involved with that, the mind also becomes totally entangled. So the mind must be trained so as to not be attracted to the glitter of this world. The sense objects are very attractive. Especially the modern civilization has perfected the art of distracting people from self-realization. The destructive arts have been perfected by modern society. The destructive art of distracting from the real goal of life. So outside everything is so attractive, so nice. And it looks that perhaps this is what will give us enjoyment. So long as we are absorbed in thoughts of enjoying the sense objects, this will lead to bondage. This will lead to degradation. And therefore, the mind that is absorbed in thoughts of enjoying this world is our enemy. Because the mind is the cause of us taking birth again and again. Now generally we use the word enemy as one who acts against our interest. If someone does something against us, we say he is my enemy. What is the worst thing the enemy can do to you or to me? What is the worst thing? He can kill us, isn't it? The worst thing he can do. So we consider an enemy to be a very great enemy if he can destroy our body. But how many times can the enemy destroy your body? Only once, right? Because once your body is destroyed, then you have to take a next birth somewhere, and your former enemy doesn't know where you are. Neither you know where, you don't know where your former enemy is. But just consider the activities of the mind. The mind that is not being used properly, the mind that is not a pure spiritual instrument, is absorbed in the sense objects of this world. And therefore it is dragging the mind, the conditioned soul, again and again in the cycle of birth and death. This material world has been compared to an ocean, and all the living entities are being tossed about by the waves of this ocean, sometimes up, down, up, down. So consider the mind like a heavy weight which is always pulling the soul down. The swimmer is trying to go up to save himself, to come out of the water. He may succeed for some time, but again the mind pulls him down. And again, and again, and again. This has been happening from time immemorial. So because the mind is absorbed in the objects of the senses, therefore one is forced to die, then one is forced to be born again, then one is forced to die again. In other words, the mind is the cause of destroying many, many bodies of ours. So who is the greater enemy? Our enemy of this one life or the mind? Why? Because it is killing us again and again. It has already destroyed our bodies millions and millions of times. As many births we have taken here in this world, that many times this mind has been the cause of our death, of destroying this body. And not only that, it has given us untold suffering. We may say, all right, if my enemy is more powerful, let him kill me once and finish it. But suppose he goes on torturing us. Slow death, very terrible. Slow torturing is much more painful. Constant torture over a long period of time and not killing you. In China, they would have a, in the ancient times, a torture for the enemies. They would sit, they would make the criminal or the enemy sit under a tap, the prisoner. And only one drop of water would fall on his head, bit by bit. Like that, every few seconds. He would go mad within short time, because his whole mind is waiting, next drop is coming, next drop is coming, next drop is coming. We think a torture means just to kill somebody, to harm his body, but so many ingenious ways of torture are there. People nowadays are very expert in that, in how to destroy things, how to do evil things. So such an enemy is more dangerous. If he at least shoots us one time, everything is over. But a person, an enemy who always makes you, tortures you to death in a slow way, is far more dangerous. So not only has the mind destroyed many, many, many bodies of ours and been the cause of our death so many times, but even when we are living, it is torturing us. From birth to death, it is torturing us, and it gives a final blow at the time of death. This is the nature of the mind. So mind is a cause of bondage, of degradation, of suffering when it is engaged in the sense objects of this world, and therefore it is considered Ripur Atmanaha. It is considered one's enemy. On the other hand, the mind that is absorbed not in sense gratification but in service to Lord Krishna, that mind becomes elevated. Uddharet Atmanatmanam. It becomes delivered. Its consciousness level rises. It becomes pure. And therefore, instead of getting bound, it becomes liberated. Liberation means freedom. Freedom from bondage. Freedom from suffering. So in this way, the mind, when absorbed in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, uplifts the soul, makes it pure, liberates it, and therefore the mind is our friend. Because he gives us eternal happiness. Suppose one friend comes and gives us some money when we really need it. We are very, very grateful to that friend because he has helped us in time of need. He has given us a certain amount of money. But he has helped us only once. But the mind is going to help us in such a way that the benefit will be eternal. Whatever money our friend is giving, it will get exhausted soon. But if the mind is absorbed in devotional service, then the benefit that the mind can give us is eternal happiness. Is there any friend who can give us eternal happiness? Nowadays, a friend may give some money, he may give some good words of advice, he may give some affection. But who can give eternal happiness? Mind. So the mind, when absorbed in Krishna consciousness, is our friend. The mind, when absorbed in material consciousness, is our enemy. This is the point that Lord Krishna is saying here. So therefore, Lord Krishna has also used the word he. He means certainly. Atma, atma eva hi atmano bandhu. That certainly the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul when it is absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So the next question may arise that, all right, you have said that the friend or the mind is a friend or the enemy, but tell us more about it. Is it simply that the mind being absorbed in Krishna consciousness is our friend? We are also trying to go in Krishna consciousness. We are also devotees, but mind is still troubling us. Isn't it troubling? Everybody agrees? Mind is sufficiently troubling? So then, we need some more explanation. So Krishna will offer that explanation. So let us now chant verse 6. So kindly chant after me.
Bandhuratmatmanastasya येनात्मैवात्मनाजितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत् बन्धु आत्मात्मनस्तस्य.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. For him who has conquered the mind, the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. For him who has conquered the mind, if you know how to control fire, then you can do many, many wonderful things. If you know how to use a knife properly, and if it is in your control, you can do many useful things with a knife. But if you do not know how to control the fire, or a car, or a knife, then that will cause great damage. So the knife, the car, the fire, is it our friend or is it our enemy? It could be, it depends. Depends on what? Depends on whether you can control it or not. If you know the art of controlling the fire, or the car, or the knife, then the knife is your good friend, fire is your good friend, car is your good friend. But somebody has taken a little bit of alcohol, he has lost control of himself, and is driving. He has lost control of the car. So the car is his friend or enemy? Enemy. Why? Because he has no longer any control over the car. And therefore it will cause a lot of difficulties for him. So similarly, Whether the mind is one's friend or enemy depends upon one very simple fact: are we able to control it? To one who has controlled the mind becomes the best friend. It's like a dog, isn't it? Every day you see, if it's a domestic dog, no problem, he is your friend. All your enemies will be scared to come there. But if you go to your enemy's house, then his dog will be your enemy, because he is trained like that. So the whole art of making the mind our friend is to control it. There are many ways of controlling. We have to learn the techniques. Like there are many thieves who will come and control a watchdog by giving some food, a favorite food of the dog, and the dog will come wagging its tail, eat that food, and then they will steal something and go away. They know, they have learned the technique and the art of how to control even a dog who is very inimical, very hostile. So the mind is also very hostile to us. So we have to know how to deal with the mind, how to control the mind. But the mind is so vigorous, as we will see at the end of this chapter, when Arjuna will lament, Chanchalam hi manaha Krishna pramathi balavatridham tasyaham nigraham manye vayur iva sudushkaram. Arjuna is going to lament that, my dear Krishna, you are asking me to control the mind. Sorry, not for me. I cannot do it. Because mind is so difficult to control. Chanchalam, it is so restless. Pramathi, balavat, dridham, it is very obstinate, it is very strong. And in this way, it is more difficult to control the mind than to control the wind. So therefore, the mind control is what is being talked about here. Krishna has not yet given the indication of how the mind is to be controlled. But he is saying that first let us understand that the mind has to be controlled, then everything will be alright. So, bandhur atmatmanastasya yenatmaiva atmanajitaha anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. Even the great poet, English poet Milton, he has said, the mind is a thing in itself. It makes a heaven out of hell and a hell out of heaven. So even those who are not spiritually minded, they also understood the cause of misery is the mind. Because when everything is going well, suddenly something happens and you are miserable. You are very happy. All of a sudden you become miserable. Have you experienced? You are very miserable, suddenly some good news comes and you are very happy. In 1 second everything gets transformed. So heaven, hell, hell, heaven is the mind. The mind can transform our life completely. So if we control our mind, we will not be on the roller coaster, up, down, up, down. The nature of the mind is sankalpa vikalpa manaha, to accept, reject, that is its dharma. It likes something. When something appears to be pleasant from the point of view of sense gratification, then the mind becomes very favorably inclined towards that. The mind is happy. But when that thing goes against sense gratification, the mind becomes very unhappy. And in this way, our whole life is simply up and down, up and down, up and down. So we have to control this duality. We have to tolerate this. Therefore, one of the first lessons of the Bhagavad Gita is Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukhadukhadaha Agamapayino Nityas Tam Stitukshasva Bharata. My dear Arjuna, happiness and distress comes and goes like the summer and winter seasons come and go. Therefore, you must learn to tolerate them. And one who has learned to tolerate this will be eligible for liberation. Tolerating the dualities of nature means to tolerate, to control the mind. The mind gives us trouble. Just tolerate. Don't listen to the mind. The mind will cry, the mind will do many things. Just like a small child. Sometimes a small child will throw a tantrum. You may have experienced. It will shout and scream and throw things here and there. Just ignore. eventually he will stop. Isn't it? You have experience? Similarly, mind. Mind will also throw tantrums. I want this, I want that, this is not good, this is good, I hate him, I like him. So many things the mind will say. Constantly the mind is bombarding us. But we should try to learn the art of keeping ourselves aloof from the mind. Clinically, like a doctor sees a patient, we should see our mind. So, Mr. Mind, now what you want? Okay, you want this, you stay away, don't trouble me. You may say whatever you like, I am not going to succumb to you. The mind is like a terrorist. We are talking of terrorists outside, there is a much more dangerous terrorist sitting inside. Every now and then he is holding us to ransom. Come on, give me this, I want this gratification, I want that gratification, and we are forced to go. Our history, our whole life in this universe is a history of succumbing to terrorism of the mind. The mind is always supremely strong. It is godlike in its strength. It has controlled all the senses. It has controlled our intelligence. And nothing is able to control the mind. So the mind has been reigning supreme in our life, terrorizing us. Whatever the mind wants, we are forced to give. Like terrorists hijack a plane and they want money or they want something else, and the government is forced to give in order to save the lives of the passengers. So similarly, mind demands, makes unreasonable demands of us, which are not for our good, but still we have to do it because we have no power to resist the mind. So the mind is the cause of our troubles if we do not know how to control. There is a story of the Avanti Brahman in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has been narrated several times before. But because it is of special interest in this context, we will repeat it again. In a city called Avantipura, many, many, many years ago, there used to live a businessman. He had lots of money, but he was very, very miserly. So miserly was he that he would not, what to speak of spending money for his family members, he would not even spend money for himself. So you can imagine how miserly he was. Very greedy, and he had a very envious nature, and nobody liked him, not even his family members. And because he was not performing any religious activities, even the deities presiding over the yajñas, because grihasthas in Karma Kanda are supposed to do pancha yajña, five kinds of yajñas for different purposes. So even those deities in the charge of the pancha yajña, they also became unhappy with him. Gradually, because of everybody's curses, this businessman started losing everything he had. Some robberies took place, a fire took place in his godown. Then in this way, the government sent the income tax people to take something from him. And in this way, gradually, bit by bit, everything that he had was gone. Now, as it is, his family members hated him because he had tortured them so much. And now, he was not even giving them whatever little he was giving earlier. So the family members started totally neglecting him. They started insulting him. And this was extremely painful to this man. He did not know how to cope with this situation. And he began to reflect on his condition very deeply for a long time. And as a result of this deep reflection, somehow he remembered, because of the past samskar that he had, of somehow having faith in Lord Vishnu. So somehow he developed a deep sense of renunciation. And then began to think within himself. And he said, I have been uselessly just running after money, money, money and more money all my life. I have neither used my money for enjoyment, neither I have used it for dharma. And in this way, I have earned nothing but sin. The money I will not be able to carry away at the time of death, and I am only going to carry away my sin. Greed is such a nuisance for the conditioned soul that even small bit of greed will destroy all one's good qualities. Just like if one is very, very beautiful, but a small spot of leprosy will spoil that beauty, in the same way, one may have many, many good qualities, but when one has greed, then all these qualities are spoiled. When greed comes into the picture, one develops all the bad qualities. Like talking lies, one becomes envious, one becomes quarrelsome, one becomes possessive. One does all those things to earn and to protect one's wealth. One starts taking intoxicants, and all the evils and sins automatically come when there is greed. And at the end, death comes, everything is finished. So he began to reflect that now I'm an old man, death is very close to my life, and I have no money, I have no family, I have nothing, everybody has disowned me. Then surely this is the mercy of Lord Hari upon me. Because he wants me to understand the nature of this world. He understands that I have to be detached from this world to become happy. Okay? This businessman took to the life of a sannyasi. He renounced the world and started wandering like a mendicant here and there. But people far and wide knew this person as a very miserly person. They knew what had happened in his life and how his family had rejected him. So now when such a person became a sannyasi, nobody took him seriously. On the contrary, because he had hurt so many people and insulted so many people, everybody would give him pain. When he would go, children and other people also would come and steal his belongings. They would throw things at him. They would spit on him. The Bhagavatam gives a very elaborate description of how the general public would harass him. But this man would sit very quietly, without any objections, without shouting, without retaliating, and he accepted all this as providence. People abused him, people hurt him physically, they threw foul substances on him, but still he never complained. Then one day, as he was traveling, he began to recite a song, Bhikshu Geet, the song of the renunciant. And in this song, he began to reflect, what is it that is the cause of my suffering? I am suffering like anything now. Is it that my stars are bad? Is it that my time is bad? Is it that my destiny is bad? Am I now receiving the fruits of my karma? Is that the cause of my suffering? Are these people who are insulting me, are they the cause of my suffering? Are my family members the cause of my suffering? He began to do one by one, analyze all the possible causes of suffering in his life. And he concluded, no, none of these are the cause of my suffering. And what was his conclusion? What is the cause of suffering? He said, my own mind is the cause of my suffering. He says, the mind is a reservoir of our desires. It activates the three modes of material nature and causes one to act in a certain way. And the conditioned soul then identifies with this material world, the mind identifies with the material world and tries to enjoy. In the process of enjoyment, there is bondage and there is suffering. The mind itself is the cause of all one's suffering. Who can one blame? If one bites one's own tongue, can one blame somebody else? The Avanti Brahman thinks like this. We have all experienced. When we are eating food, we bite our own tongue. Have you experienced? Very painful. Then can you blame the cook? You know, can you blame whoever else is sitting on the dining table? Why you have cooked so badly? Whom can you blame? You have to keep quiet. What to do? Just be happy and be contented. You cannot complain. You can't blame anybody else. So similarly, the Avanti Brahman is saying, that is my own mind. That is the cause of my misery. So whom can I blame? Who is responsible for it but except me, my mind? because I have not succeeded in controlling my mind. So the mind, and then he chants one verse. Etam sa asthaya paratmanishtham. That means now I have decided very firmly with nishtha. Etam cha asthaya paratmanishtham. That I will surrender myself to the Supreme Lord. And he says, I will follow in the path of the great personalities who have come in the past. Purvatamer maharishibhihi. All the great maharishis who have come in the past, I will follow in their footsteps. And by so doing, aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nisheva yaiva. He says, I will cross over this ocean of material existence. Aham tarishyami. Tarishyami means I will cross over. I will swim over. Tamo, this material world is an ocean of darkness or ignorance. I will cross over this ocean of material existence by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda. O Lord Krishna, Mukunda Angri, Angri means feet. Mukunda Angri Nishevayaiva, Nishevaya means to serve. So the Avanti Brahman, after this reflection and introspection, he decided, became determined. Yes, I must control my mind, and the best way to control the mind, I will definitely cross over this ocean of material existence by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda or Lord Krishna, just as the great acharyas in the past have done. And I will follow in their footsteps. In fact, this Etam cha asthaya paratmanishtham is a very famous verse, because in our sampradaya, when people take sannyas, they use this mantra. So it is like a sannyas mantra for many, many Vaishnavas in some sampradayas, because the real purpose of sannyas is mentioned here. The real purpose of sannyas is not to renounce. The real purpose of sannyas is to increase one's service to Lord Krishna. And the kind of determination that is expressed by the Avanti, he was a Brahmin to the business profession, is an inspiration for us. That he was so much of insult and suffering, but he understood, by philosophically looking into the matter, that his mind was the problem. And he decided to control his mind by dovetailing it in devotional service. Savai manaha Krishna padaravindayo. Just like Maharaj Ambarish, he absorbed his mind in the Supreme Lord. Yena tena prakarena manaha Krishna niveshayet. Somehow or other, by hook or by crook, one has to engage the mind in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Sarve vidhi nishedasyur etayor eva kinkarah. The Shastras have so many regulative principles and rules and laws, but this is the most important point. The essence of all the Shastric vidhis, the rules, and the nishedha and the prohibitions. That is, somehow or other, the mind must be focused on the Supreme Lord Krishna, always. Manmana bhava mad bhaktaha. So manmana, Krishna is saying, always put your mind on me. So when the mind is absorbed in Lord Krishna, then the mind cannot therefore be absorbed in the sense objects. Therefore the mind becomes our best friend. This is a formula for one who wants to make the mind his best friend. So we will stop here. Thank you very much. There will be darshan, then question answers, and after that we will have